Today we have the Federal Minister of Education and Youth, Alan Tudge, with us. Welcome to SBS Hindi program, sir. So as of 1st of December, we will see the return of international students who have been locked out of Australia for nearly 2 years. It's been a long wait, but now good days are just around the corner. What is your message to them now?
Absolutely. So from the 1st of December, the borders are open and international students can come back and we'll be welcoming them with open arms. And there's about 160,000 people who are offshore waiting to come back into the country. About 18,000 of those are Indian nationals, and they've always been a great source of international students for Australia. We're going to welcome them back here to get on with their studies, and of course many of them will stay in the country and become great citizens down the track.
Sure. Mr. Minister, can you give us a sense how valuable are international students to the Australian economy and as to the country?
They've been a massive source of benefit to Australia in a number of ways. From an economic perspective, international education is actually our third biggest export market. Typically, it's worth about $40 billion a year. But it's more than that. It's obviously greatly assist with the people-to-people linkages across the various nations. India, for example, there's so many thousands of students come here. They study here, they learn to love the country, they meet other Aussies. Then when they go back to India, of course, they have a fondness for this country, and that helps with our people-to-people linkages and with the overall engagement with our two countries. And thirdly, of course, international students just contribute to the classroom environment. When you've got people from around the world in your classroom, you have a much richer and engaging discussion. So on those three levels, international students have been terrific for Australia.
Sure. We saw some major announcements yesterday in relation to visa settings for temporary graduates as well as international students. And there's a very positive mood. Students are really excited and really happy. But I guess what I want to know is when they can apply for this new replacement visa. And is that visa going to be free? Free of charge? And also, what about the onshore temporary graduates? Can they apply for this visa as well?
Yes, so if they've got a post-study work rights visa, which has expired because they've been unable to get into the country, they will be able to have that renewed at no cost. So we're making that very clear. And we want them to have that opportunity, which was provided to them and was part of their studying here, and they'll get that. More generally, we've made some changes to ensure that effectively that no one's been disadvantaged by not being able to come into the country, and particularly in relation to those post-study work rights, which I know Indian residents particularly value, and they can stay here for a year or two afterwards. We've actually extended the post-study work rights as well for those students who are going to do a master's by coursework.
Yeah.
So they'll now have 3 years of post-study work rights if they do their master's by coursework, which I think will be really attractive for people to come here, do that master's, and then stay for a few years and work.
So when they can start applying for this replacement visa for the onshore?
Yeah, I don't know the precise date. I imagine that will be very, very soon, though, when Minister Hawke, the Immigration Minister, will make that announcement.
Right. So how many students are you expecting back into the country from next year?
Well, as I said, there's 160,000 who have already got a student visa who are offshore, and we would like to see them all back if we can. And then my expectation is there'll probably be about another 50,000 or so who will apply for a student visa now that they know they can come into the country. These are significant numbers. The bottleneck will probably be in the short term, just getting on the flights and getting your arrangements organised. But hopefully they can get those flights, then they can organise their accommodation back here and be back hopefully for at least the beginning of the new year next year.
But, you know, since they have been locked out of the country for the last 2 years, many of the Indian students, international students who have been studying online have been looking at other study destinations like Canada and US. And so are you concerned to lose that share of your international students to other countries like these?
I don't think we will. At the end of the day, we have got some of the greatest universities. We've got the most enviable lifestyle. We're a very welcoming multicultural country, and we have very competitive visas in relation to post-study work rights. That combination is very attractive, and I think we'll see international students roar back.
This morning I read that you were saying that the universities are over-relying on countries like China and India. And, you know, we should look at the other countries like US, UK and Canada. So do you think that will backfire or?
No, in some respects, what that was saying is that as international student numbers come back, let's think about the medium term in trying to get a broader diversity of international students and not be so reliant on China and India in particular. Now, why is that? Because you have greater diversity in your classroom and it enhances the student experience to start with. But more importantly, it actually reduces the financial risk for some of those institutions as well. We saw back in, back in the 1990s, I think it was, where we had that issue here in Melbourne with some of the, a couple of Indian students were atrociously attacked in the streets. And then the student numbers dropped very, very rapidly. And because there's such large numbers from one country, it has that significant financial impact versus if you have a broader diversity of students from across the world, then it just diversifies your financial risk as well.
Will that mean the students coming from India will reduce in coming years?
I don't think so. I'm not saying that we want anybody to reduce. We're just saying let's also be thinking about other markets. We do so well out of India. We love having Indian students come to Australia, but let's also put some effort into other countries so that when those Indian students are here, as much as when the Australian students are here and, you know, in your classroom, you've got students from around the world in your classroom, really making a rich classroom environment rather than just having, say, students from one country other than Australians. Still good, but you can also be so much better as well.
Sure. And I'm sure every international student would like to come back and start his or her course here. There is a mad rush to book flights. Is federal government in talks with the airlines industry to sort that and give a solution to these international students?
I think the airlines will be responding very rapidly. I mean, they've got a commercial interest. They've been hit very hard by COVID and they'll want to put those airlines on very quickly. In order to meet the demand. And the demand would be very significant, I think.
But the tickets are really expensive. I mean, the one-way ticket is...
I appreciate that right at the moment. And until all of the airline industry gets back to normal as well, the chances are those flights will be a little bit more expensive. But
when can we expect that?
I don't know. I haven't got that crystal ball. But, the airline industry is, they're driven by a profit motive. They want to make money, so they'll be putting on more and more airlines in order to get that revenue in.
Yeah, sure. Now there's an International Education 2030 strategy in place. Can you just explain a bit about that?
Yeah, so this is trying to outline our objectives over the next 10 years for international education for Australia. So the first part is the recovery phase, and that is getting our international student market back to where it was. We've done so well. And we're, in some respects, we've opened the borders and we've put some accelerators in there as well to encourage people to come. And then the second step is more the medium term. And what can we do to make that international education more resilient over the medium term? Having greater diversity of international students being one. Second is having a greater alignment, ideally, with what students study with our skills shortages here in Australia. We've got a bit of a mismatch there. Ideally, we'd like to see more students, for example, doing some of those science and engineering subjects or nursing or other areas where we've got shortages rather than we've got so many going into other courses where we don't necessarily have shortages. Focusing, obviously, on the student experience, so critically important, both in the classroom as well as from a social cohesion perspective. And then the fourth element of that strategy is where are the growth opportunities for Australia? Yes, we've got some growth opportunities for more and more students to come onshore, but in my view, there's also enormous opportunities for Australian institutions, institutions to capture and support developing countries with education in country. India, for example, the government has a stated goal to educate hundreds of millions of people.
Right.
Now, those hundreds of millions can't all come to Australia by definition, but we can offer some practical assistance and good courses in India, online, hybrid courses and the like, and support India's development and also create a revenue source for Australia.
So the education sector, as you mentioned, is a very important sector for both India and Australia, and it's a part of our free trade agreement as well when Mr. Morrison would be visiting next year to sign that. Would you be a part of that delegation as well?
I don't know. I don't know as of yet. So it certainly is a very large part of the Australia-India relationship. So if I'm not there in person, I will certainly have my fingerprints on that agreement.
So what will be the, what will it comprise when it comes to education between India and Australia in that agreement?
Well, we'll wait and see. I'm not going to sort of preempt anything at this particular stage, but it obviously builds on very strong foundations. And if there's anything more that we can do to enhance that, whether it be visa products, whether it be other things that we can offer, then that will be a good thing.
Sure. My last question is, there are a lot of paperwork right now currently for students or international or any international traveller who come to Australia. Is that paperwork going to be reduced in near future, especially for international students?
Yeah, it's a good question. Ideally, you keep the paperwork to an absolute minimum.
Yeah.
But having said that, there are heightened international security concerns these days, so you have to make sure that we do those checks properly. And the Australian public would expect us to do that. We want to make sure that the health checks are done properly. And again, I don't think that's unreasonable. So that's always going to be a requirement. And I appreciate that takes a little bit of work on behalf of the student or on behalf of the person wanting to come to the country. But hopefully they also understand that we're doing that for a reason as well, to ensure that we get good people coming into the country who are healthy, who are going to be great people, as we've done so well, and we want to continue that.
Thank you so much for talking to us and giving your valuable time, sir.
Absolute pleasure.